Today, we're talking about an elusive and increasingly expensive commodity, a good night's sleep. Writer Karen Russell has been imagining a world in which people are actually dying from insomnia, and the only remedy is a kind of creepy technology called sleep donation. You might remember Karen Russell as the MacArthur genius who wrote Swamplandia and Vampires in the Lemon Grove. Here's how her new story begins.
The pundits promise, with weird relish, that we are seeing the end of sleep as we know it. TV has become a glum hall of prophets. Dr. Davisha Frank from the Boston Sleep Tank, who speaks like a robot programmed to self-destruct. Dour professors wearing sunflower yellow ties that film well. According to these professional Cassandras, sleep has been chased off the globe by our 24-hour news cycle, our polluted skies and crops and waterways, the bald eyeballs of our glowing devices. We Americans are sitting in an electric chair that we engineered. What becomes of our circadian rhythms, the old, glad harmonies that leapt through us like the vascular thrust of water through leaves of grass? Bummer news, Walt. That song's done. And the endogenous clock, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, hereditary prize of every human, that tiny star cluster of neurons in the hypothalamus, which regulates our yawning appetites for hard winter light and spacey blackness, the master clock that syncs us to one another and to the Earth's rotation, the sun and the moon, to all the sister kingdoms on the 24-hour circuit, bacteria, Gila monsters, great sequoias, blue whales, orange groves, bear cubs, mustangs, toadstools, leopards, golden ingles, hyacinths, hippopotami, those tiny wizards, the butterflies, those glue artists, the arachnids, and all the sequin life on the seafloor, the black urchins that improbably still clock time with us. Bummer news, everybody. The clock stops for humanity. Time itself will soon become an anachronism. Time, as our species has lived it on the planet, will cease to exist. No more dark light binary. No more active red daytime, blue evening dissolving. No longer is sunshine the coagulant of consciousness, causing us to clot into personalities, to cohere once more on our pillows each morning. These TV scientists predict a global desertification of dreams. Soon, they promise, the disruption will afflict all of us. Sleep will go extinct. And eventually, unless we can find some way to synthesize it, so will we.
Wow.
It's kind of grim. Sorry, guys.
Well, so let's talk about this world you've created in sleep donation. This is set in the near future in the midst of a lethal insomnia epidemic. What's going on as you imagine it?
We are 7 years into this insomnia epidemic, and they've invented a new technology, pretty recent technology, sleep donation. I think the closest analogy I have to something in our America, not this imaginary one, would be sort of the American Red Cross, you know, or blood donation. So if you sign up for this program, a white van comes to your house at night and they slip a catch mask, this silver helmet on you, and you breathe into a tube, you take an ultra sedative, you're rolled under into sleep, and you donate your dreams to an insomniac. And that's sort of the umbilicus that's attaching all of these insomniacs to life. I mean, they can no longer sleep on their own, so they're wholly dependent on these sleep donors.
So what's happened that there's this insomnia epidemic? I mean, have you worked out a kind of plausible medical scenario for this?
I hope so. I think that some of the underpinnings for it actually are plausible. I have some good neuroscientist friends, and we sort of had fun, dark fun, you know, drafting out a kind of orexin dysfunction, a dysfunction to the system that regulates arousal and sleep-wake cycle, appetite. And narcoleptics, they have just the opposite problem, right, where they have just a totally interrupted
wake cycle.
Exactly, wake cycle. Thanks, Anne. And in this world, I was thinking the dysfunction, no one knows what triggered it, if the cue is environmental, you know, if it has something to do, as in the section I just read, you know, there are all kinds of paranoid speculation that we've absolutely altered some animal rhythm with the way that we're living today, that it's connected to our glowing devices or maybe to some kind of underlying genetic cause that's been active. No one knows, right, what the trigger is. accept that. It does seem like this growing population is suffering this orexin dysfunction, and they can't sleep, and if they can't sleep, they die.
Wow. All of which brings us to your protagonist, Trish Edgewater. Her sister was one of the first to die in the insomnia epidemic, and so Trish now works for this emergency organization, kind of like the Red Cross, called the Slumber Corps. What can you tell us about Trish?
You know, things really didn't take off for me until that lady showed up. She's the first, I think, in my short story collection, there's an adult female protagonist, but I've never tried anything this length, and I was excited to have a first-person narrator who is this young adult woman. I sort of gravitate towards wall-eyed 13-year-old boys or monsters, so this was exciting for me, Anne. She's in her late 20s, and she lost her sister to this fatal insomnia. You know, her sister had had trouble sleeping her whole life, and then for unclear reasons, when she was in her 20s as a college student, this dysfunction kicked in and eventually killed her. They didn't have the sleep donation technology at that time. So I was imagining someone who's in some ways quite naive, right? She really wants to give her life unreservedly to a cause, and this seems to be the right one, where she's going to solicit sleep donors for this program. You know, they have all these insomniacs on their wait rolls, and they need healthy sleepers. They need good dreamers to provide rest for these people. Mm. What she does is she has this sort of dark talent, I guess, for grotesquely kind of recreating her sister's death and implanting this nightmare in some ways in these potential donors. So her recruitment strategy, I was thinking, is pretty, speaking of ghoulish, would be pretty ghoulish. She feels increasingly ambivalent about the way she's going about asking for these sleep donations as the novella progresses.
Mm-hmm. There's a particular donor or donor family that Trish works with, Mr. and Mrs. Harkonnen, and their daughter, Baby A, and she's something kind of special. She's a universal donor?
Yeah, she's a universal donor. You know, it's funny, when I was first sort of sketching out this place, that was a throwaway detail that my unconscious just threw out like a frisbee. I don't know that babies would be donors in this kind of a scenario, that the Supreme Court would rule that babies can be donors. And I was just thinking, you know, with some kind of Swiftian relish or something, that that is likely the best source of uncorrupted sleep.
It's such a creepy twist.
I was thinking, too, just the... yeah, a sleeping baby is sort of emblematic of all kinds of innocence.
And this baby is only 6 months old. The first time someone takes her sleep, what's it called, draining her or drawing it or something?
A draw and a catch, yeah, and the little sleep trundle. It does seem like in a crisis, the costs are always borne, right, by the weakest and the most vulnerable, that there is this way in an emergency situation where certain nuance looks at who is going to support the cost. All of that gets suspended, I guess, And I was thinking about that time of suspension, how dangerous it can be, where the need becomes so great that people stop asking certain questions. And I think that it just made sense to me that in this particular para-reality, it would be these babies that they were draining for sleep.
Well, one of the things I like, though, is that, yeah, you've set up this horrific thing, but in fact, they are having the moral debate there inside your story also. I mean, the father of Baby A isn't so sure he wants his baby donating sleep anymore.
The scale is a little gonzo, right, to have this set against a backdrop of a global insomnia epidemic. But those questions feel pretty close to the home that we're living in here. And I think what we owe one another, the context in which a gift like that is made, the troubling aspect of a gift like that, right? I was thinking the obvious analogs, I guess, would be blood and organ donation. But you have a gift that's really, they call it the gift of life for a reason, right? I mean, it's an inherently unequal position between donor and donee. Mm-hmm. And I think that can create all kinds of moral complexity. And I think for this father, part of the horror story there for me was that these are very good people, the Harkonnens, and they do feel an obligation, this moral obligation to donate sleep to help, you know, and with sort of this emergency situation. The father has sort of less and less confidence that this institution has any sense of him as a human man or his daughter as a human daughter any longer, right, as this flesh and blood daughter, that she's sort of become this larger-than-life baby, a universal donor. I should mention that they just discovered that her sleep is of a purity, that it can be transfused into any body. It's usually a difficult process to match a sleep donor to an insomniac, and not so with this little kid.
Our producer, Doug Gordon, was just showing me an article about a guy in the real world, not in a fictional world. There's a guy, an inventor named Hunter Lee Soik, who's created a new app called Shadow. And what he wants to do with it is create a huge dream database in order to discover connections between our sleeping and our waking selves.
And can I tell you something wild? So when we were working on this, I mean, it's just a little throwaway bit, and that's not, it's not throwaway, but I mean, it's not what it was in the original draft, which was that I had the CDC, you know, and these other new agencies were tracking dreams, right? They have dream epidemiologists because they want to see if there are these potentially infectious nightmares. They're doing dream donations, and some nightmares are infectious. That's what they're filtering and, you know, screening the sleep for. So I had this idea that there would be like a CDC database, the same way they keep databases for other contagious diseases, and alerts and updates, sort of like the gazelle dream runs rampant in eastern Ohio, you know, or just they would be able to track the patterns of dreams the way you track weather patterns.
But I think that's what this guy really wants
that's
to do.
That's what he's doing. That's what I'm saying. Isn't that crazy, though? I mean, I just thought you can't even keep ahead of right. what's actually happening.
Art imitating life or life imitating art.
It's a funny thing. This woman who has such a real ambivalence by the end of the novella about the work that she's doing, sort of coercing people to make these donations. I do think that's a funny thing, that sleep is sort of the last bastion where you have a total privacy from advertisers. It'll be interesting to see who signs up for that app.
Well, I was going to say thanks for writing a book that'll keep us all awake at night. Karen, thanks so much.
Thank you, Anne.
Well, it's always fun talking with you.
I had a really great time. I'll send you guys some dreams if they ever invent this technology. I'll I'll select
the
good ones.
Your dreams will be worth more than other people's. Writer Karen Russell. She was a Pulitzer Prize finalist for her novel Swamplandia, and she's received a MacArthur Genius Award. We were talking about her e-novella, Sleep Donation.